Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in life: our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. So in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about, is music really a universal language? Well, the latest study from Harvard says, yes, it is. And we'll talk about it a little bit more. Then I'll speak to Lucinda Bacon-White, author of Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wildness in a Civilized World. I love this book. It was amazing. Just brought up a lot of stuff. So don't go anywhere. We're going to talk to Lucinda about her experience, and it's awesome. You can call us on the studio line at 951-922-3532 if you wanted to speak to me or Lucinda. And be sure to listen to my podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and share it with your friends. Email me. Let me know the topics that you want me to talk about or the topics that you want me to bring guests for. And if there's anything about the show that you like, if anything about the show you don't like and you want me to change it, I would love to hear from you. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
So this is the tip of the week. Now, this past week has been a week of giving thanks and feeling grateful. I wish for every week to be honored this way for all of us. I just came back from Hong Kong yesterday, and it was amazing to see how different we all are, and yet we have so many similarities. And I felt at home there, and it was odd for me because I've never been to East Asia, and this was the first country actually in that region that I've traveled to. I felt home. It was interesting to me. As I feel home in the U.S., or I felt home when I went to India, or when I, you know, as a child, when I lived in Iran. So actually anywhere that I have been recently, the feeling of being at home with people or places comes from our way of looking at others and the world. I remember those days that I felt like I did not belong to anyone or any place, not even my own family or at home, or the, even when I bought my own home, I didn't feel belonging to my own homes. And I needed to change it because like, this isn't it. And the sense of belonging, it has become an attitude, a shift that no matter where I am, I can feel that I belong. And no matter who's in front of me, I can find some sense of belonging to them. So begin looking. Who do you belong to and what belongs to you? Where, location-wise, do you belong to? And where, as a location-wise, you think belongs to you? So imagine, are there like situations, places, people, categories of people that you actually feel more at home and others that you don't? And what constitutes of those categories? Like, how did you divide those? Did you have an option of choosing to divide? Or was it given to you by family and cultures and just spaces and structures? It'd be interesting for you to look at it and see what works and what doesn't work for you. So beyond the sense of the ego that needs to create some territory for feeling powerful or, you know, being in control, a sense of belonging can also be a powerful tool for essence of connection. So when you look for similarities among all of us, you'll find it. Celebrating our similarities can create the trust to be together, to be with each other, to be with each other as neighbors, to work together, do business together, fall in love with each other, marry, and befriend each other. Honoring our differences allows us to learn from each other, entertain each other, create new experiences with each other, and grow. So I honor all the ways that we are similar and different, and truly grateful that you are in one way or another in my life and in my world. And may you feel that you belong to all, that there is, and celebrate the way that you are similar and different from the rest of the world. And I want to also say thank you and feel really grateful to have Sean with me at the studio and KMET for allowing us to be with all of you. So don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back with the research of, is music really a universal language?
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Two articles in the most recent issue of Science support the idea that music all around the globe shares important commonalities, despite many differences. Research led by Samuel Mayer at Harvard University have undertaken a large-scale analysis of music from cultures around the world. Cognitive biologists Fitch and Tudor Popescu of the University of Vienna also suggest that human musicality unites all cultures across the planet. So the many musical styles of the world are so different, at least superficially, that music scholars are often skeptical that they have any important shared features. Universality is a big word and a dangerous one. The great Leonard Bernstein once said that, but indeed, an ethnomusicology of universality became something of a dirty word. But new research promised to once again revive the search for deep universal aspects of human musicality. So Samuel Mayer at Harvard University found that all cultures studied make music and use similar kind of music in similar contexts with consistent features in each case. For example, dance music is fast and rhythmic, lullabies, soft and slow, all around the world. So furthermore, all cultures show tonality, building up a small subset of notes from some bass note, just as in the Western diatonic scale. So healing songs tend to use fewer notes and more closely spaced than love songs. And these and other findings indicate that there are indeed universal properties of music that likely reflect deeper commonalities of human cognition, a fundamental human musicality. In a science perspective piece in the same issue, University of Vienna researchers commented that human musicality fundamentally rests on a small number of fixed pillars, hard-coded predispositions afforded to us by the ancient physiological infrastructures of our shared biology. These musical pillars are then seasoned with the specifics of every individual culture, giving rise to the beautiful kaleidoscopic assortment that we find in the world music. As humanity comes closer together, so does our wish to understand what it is that we all have in common in all aspects of behavior and culture. The new research suggests that human musicality is one of those shared aspects of human cognition, just as European countries are set to be united in diversity, so too the medley of human musicality unites all cultures across the planet. See, we have so many languages to be together with, and that's definitely, music is one of the best ones. So I'm coming back to talk to Lucinda White. She began her professional career with an MBA and a coveted position at IBM. Throughout the years, Lucinda's deep connection with nature and her insatiable quest for learning has led her to study and work with internationally acclaimed philosophers and prominent figures across a broad spectrum of disciplines. Now, as an inner wildness guide, and we'll find out what that is, she is an expert in the process of self-discovery and personal transformation, and is the author of Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wildness in a Civilized World. We need that. Through private coaching, public speaking, and her writings, she teaches you how to be authentically wild in a civilized world. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Lucinda White.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Lucinda White, the author of Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wildness in a Civilized World. Thank you for being on my show, Lucinda.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I'm so thrilled to be here.
I really was intrigued and loved your book. I have to confess, I haven't finished it yet, so don't tell me the end. Don't tell anybody who's listening the end, because I really want to finish the book. Obviously, I work in the field of mental health, and I work with a lot of depression. But one thing that was really intriguing for me is you share about your life, and you share that, you know, you come from a family that was really trying to be there for you in all the ways that were positive. And yet there was a part of you that just wasn't feeling free, and not feeling free, and the pressure that was being in that, that created depression for you. And then you talked about all of these successes that you had created in your life, whether it was in you through your education, or whether it was, you know, landing an amazing job, you know, at IBM and other tech, or creating an amazing life with your marriage life, and moving ahead, and the society and all of it. There was this other part that just wasn't being fulfilled, and that part was feeling the depression and needed to be free. And you, although you went with all that your family and society said you should, and you created all of the you know, the path that every one of us thinks success is, this other part of you who just wasn't satisfied with this and was feeling sad and going through the depression needed to be heard by you and freed. And tell us about that, because I think most of the people, you know, think that depression always has to come from traumas and, you know, really, really hardcore issues in childhood or devastating issues. And yet, you know, as you begin your book, you also say, no, it can happen to all of us and the best of us. So share with us your journey, which then got you to your book.
Well, that was a really good synopsis. And it speaks to the inner wildness, the authentic wildness, that invisible nature that I have that just kept tugging at me. But I'll be 60 this month. So a long time ago when I was a child, it was a very different world. There wasn't as much talk about spirituality or the invisible realm. And so that was my contrast, my whole life, trying to understand what was that nagging inside of me. And I didn't have anyone to talk to, or did I have role models? Because I was in a very mainstream, affluent culture and taught to follow a cookie cutter formula for success, because that's what my parents knew back then. That's what our society and culture knew. So I don't like to blame them, although I did go through that, those stages where I blamed my parents. But I always came full circle to understand the meaning and to recognize that everything was an opportunity for me to learn. So quickly, what happened, I was a nature child raised by a single mother for the first decade of my life in the 60s. She wasn't a hippie hanging out with the free love movement. That might have been more, that might have been easier for her to have a community. She got pregnant at a young age and was ostracized from the culture and had to make ends meet and raise me. And she did a fine job of that, married an affluent man when I was 11, and he adopted me. So it was new set of rules and expectations from being this free, spontaneous child who talked to animals and trees to now let's go to school and behave and look beautiful and go on diets and be slender, get advanced degrees, make a lot of money, get married to a rich, affluent man. And so it was a squeeze and a crunch to shift myself. But I wanted to please my father, and I knew I was blessed. But jump ahead to age 27, when I was working at IBM, driving a Porsche, had gone on many diets to starve myself and look good, supporting myself financially, and I recognized the disconnect. Mm-hmm. The way I looked on the outside did not match how I felt on the inside. And that was my first depression that was acknowledged and recognized, and I actually had thoughts of suicide.
Yes. And when you talk about this wildness inside, which you also, the title of your book says, Realizing Authentic Wildness in the Civilized World, share what you mean by wildness. Because I think sometimes the word wildness also has a bad rap, as if it's something that is going to destroy, or it cannot be maintained or controlled or being controlled. And usually it has such a sense to it. But that's not what I got from your book about wildness at all. So tell us, what do you mean by wildness inside?
Yes, and this is such an important point. Wildness is just your authentic nature. It's your inner essence. It's actually your childlike self. If you look at children who are happy, not everybody has a perfect childhood, but when you're in your pure state as a child, You are joyful, playful, creative, spontaneous, doing what you want to do, not, and you're moving and you're skipping, dancing. You're not doing something because you think you're going to make money or worried about other people think of you. You're very spontaneous. And what our culture tends to do is sort of shape that out of us and make us fit into a cookie cutter box to contain us. Like there are, for me, for example, there were rules and expectations of how I was supposed to behave and be a lady and wear this outfit and be pleasant and charming and look everyone in the eye. And a lot of that is good, but I believe all is good until it's out of balance. So it got to the point where I was just following all these rules and I got to go on a diet and I got to look skinny and I have to get this degree and I can't say this to this person and I have to be pleasant when I'm really sad because I don't want to disrupt somebody else's mood. And there were so many rules and I was trying so hard to follow them and be the good girl that I was stiff. And then all of a sudden on the outside, I looked so perfect according to the standards in that culture at that time. But that inner wildness, my childlike self, who I was the first decade, just spontaneous, free in nature, I lost her. Because I was so in my head following the rules and so stiff. So that's what caused my depression. And it's so interesting to talk to you because you're a trained psychologist and you understand this scientifically and technically. All I know is my experience, which is why I wrote my memoir. I'm like a walking experiment. I have constantly immersed, been miserable, been happy, and then tracked myself the entire time to understand what is happening right now, what is happening in relationship to this person or this situation, and where am I stuck and how can I grow? I didn't know this until much later when I looked back on the cycle in my life where I was constantly transforming against all odds, but that's why I wanted to write the book, because I know what I know because I immerse and I feel it and I know it and I learn something and I transform through it. And then I'm not blaming people and I'm not being, you know, poor me, my life's been difficult. It's just, wow, it's an experience and it's not always happy. And how do I connect with that inner authentic wildness? Because it's a higher vibration. It's more fun and it helps me move and do what I want to do.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people have gone through this path in their own way. Now, up to this point of the book, I could relate in many layers, whether it was me, myself, who I thought, you know, I was going to have my home, my business, my husband, the whole thing by age 30. And I had it at age 28. And I'm like, okay, no, this isn't it. Like, you know, and I had to, like, you know, get divorced and sell the house and give up the business and do everything else and, you know, kind of like find my own way out of this. So up to here, and then working with a lot of my clients, I could kind of really relate up to 100% with you. And then the book takes completely a different path, which it was so new. It was so intriguing. And I'm sure with people who are listening to us or watching us, that is completely a new way of, or I have heard of you being finding your path. And that was first through the bones of the animal. You connected with the bones of animal. And from there, each chapter really connects to one type of animal. And you really open up and connect who you are and your wildness inside with the culture of that particular animal. And from here on, it got really intriguing. So tell us about that.
Thank you. Yes, it's exciting for me too to talk about bones. Well, just when I was in the suicidal depression, for me, it was because I didn't have that inner life force that wanted me to move. I felt trapped. There were no options out except to kill myself. But when my mother did take me to a psychologist, which back in the day was shameful for my parents. It meant that, you know, they did something wrong and not a lot of people were doing that. But to her credit, she took me to a psychologist and I stayed with it once a week for 5 years. And I slowly was able to go with professional help inward to get at who I am and what I want to be, not what the society and the culture says. And So it's little by little chipping away at that. And then after 5 years, I got married and had children and loved it. And it was my children who were the mirror for me that brought me full circle to who I was as a child. Mm-hmm. And we were on a family vacation because I flashed back. It wasn't until I was 35 that I flashed back on my childhood and thought, oh my gosh, I've been disconnected from nature since I was 11. And I didn't want that for my children. Isn't that amazing that I could never, I really had no record. I wasn't camping or doing much in nature for those 2 decades. Well, we went on a family vacation in Montana and stumbled upon an ancient graveyard of buffalo bones that were thousands of years old because the Native Americans used to run the buffaloes off a cliff to their death at the bottom, and then they would process the entire animal for food, shelter, clothing, and honor the animal. Mm-hmm. Well, there's still remnants of bones there. And I don't know what came over me. I was so driven to get a bone shard that I was picking away at the earth and the soil. And when I finally broke off a little piece, a rib bone, out of the sediments of time, and I did research on this later, those bones could have been 10,000 years old. Wow. I didn't know what I was doing. There was like electricity that ran through my body and something awoke in me. And after that, everywhere I went, I started hiking and I would find bones and I'd collect them. This is before the internet. And I was connecting with my inner essence, my childlike self, being spontaneously compelled to collect bones. And then I would have to go to a bookstore to get books to identify them. I wasn't scientific. I was a business person. I didn't know anyone who was interested in bones. I was living in Silicon Valley. My husband was a prominent CEO in high-tech Silicon Valley. And again, before the internet or during the internet, right before it exploded. And it just grew and grew and grew to the point where I was going to high society parties in Chanel and high heels, and I had dead animal parts stuffed in our living room until the day I started. So that made me interested when I did the research on the bone and where it came from, indigenous cultures, and Joseph Campbell. You talked in your opener about the commonality, the common threads. Joseph Campbell did that for me because he studied religion all around the world to find the common threads. And then I started studying indigenous cultures and their ways of being and how they were connected to nature. And that inspired me. And every shaman has a song. You talked about music in the beginning. Song is like a vibration that tunes us. And so is nature. And before we had musical instruments, nature was our music. Yes, but as we've become more and more civilized, we've become more and more disconnected from nature. And I now know nature to be music and a tuning fork. And so, yeah, I could go on and on and on about my 20-year experience with animal bones.
In your book also, you bring a lot of philosophical aspects, the spiritual aspect, but philosophical aspects within what you are learning from the culture of the animal. Obviously, the bone took you to the culture of the animal pact. And then now you are also connecting it to the human pact and how, you know, where is it that we're similar? You talk about wolf, you talked about owls, you talked about different type of animals and how we are similar in some essences with them and all the differences we have and what it is that we can learn from these similarities that not only we have with human beings across, but also with animals. It's like we're all kind of, you know, on this earth together and we all connect in one way or another. And we can, if we're looking for it, we can see a lot of the behaviors that we have in them and a lot of the behaviors they have in us. And talk a little bit about that.
Yes, and this just speaks to your question that I never answered about wildness. So we're talking about wild animals and this concept of wild. And in our modern culture, we think of wild as I'm going to jump off the roof into a swimming pool or I'm going to get drunk and party hard. But authentic wildness, which is what I talk about a lot, is just our inner essence, our childlike self. It's a very different kind of wildness. And what it means by wild is that it's spontaneous and it's not in a box. So it's like wild nature versus a very manicured garden in your yard. They're very different, because when you have to manicure nature or yourself, it takes a lot of energy and effort. It's not that it's bad at all. All is good until it's out of balance. It's just that it takes a lot of effort to trim your box hedges perfectly and design your garden versus the wilderness, which is very natural. Well, all of my training with indigenous cultures and our original way of being and their connection to nature, I realized humans are nature. We are nature. So when we connect to nature, we know more of who we are. And it is actually true that our inner nature reflects the nature outside of us and vice versa. So that if you're, for example, afraid of a snake, it's not that you're bad. It's just that it's a message for you that you're actually fearing something inside of you. Whatever symbolically snake represents, there's something inside of you that fear. And the more that we can operate from a state of love versus fear, the more we heal and the more we connect. Because any kind of fear, and I believe there's only two emotions, fear and love. So everything from anger to shame to depression to sadness to happiness to joy can fall under one of two categories. And fear is a lower vibration where we automatically put up a wall and a protection. So that's disconnective. Versus love is lighter and more free and trusting, so that it connects you automatically. You talked in your opening about being at home wherever you go. And I immediately thought a sea turtle, which is not an animal I talked about in my book, but I'm constantly working with the animals to understand my true nature. And they all speak to me in different ways. But sea turtle is one of those animals that carries its home on his back. Mm-hmm. And every morning I do a prayer and sea turtle is in it. And I just say, you know, thank you, sea turtle, for reminding me that I'm at home wherever I go. And so when the sea turtle goes inward with its legs and head into the shell, that's what I do when I connect with my inner authentic wildness, my childlike self, who I am authentically on the inside. And I can do that by slowing down or meditating or going out into nature. And the subtitle of my book is Realizing Authentic Wildness in a Civilized World. And that speaks to us having two parts. Our inner invisible essence, which I call authentic wildness, which is our spiritual self, which actually is connected to all things from plants to animals to people and a source. So the more we can get inward and connect with our soul or our authentic wildness, the more we're automatically connected. And that's what it means to be one. However, the paradox is we're human beings having a human experience on planet Earth. So that's temporal form. Got to see it. And we're meant to work on survival or we'll die. And we're meant to understand the rules of society to fit in. But we're meant to balance that with our childlike self and our wildness. So it's not an immature child that never grows up. It's balancing these two selves, your human self and your inner essence.
As you were talking, I remember I've had a lot of different types of animals. I could say I've had the honor of having them domesticated in my home. And I learned so much from my cat. I actually learned independence, complete independence, and complete communication, where, you know, when she loved me, she loved me. When she wanted me to sit down, she would tell me. And then when she was upset with me, it was very clear that she was upset. So this communication and emotional independence was something that I actually learned from my cat. I didn't have emotional independence before that. I was very emotionally dependent. And I had two cats, and each one of them really taught me a lot. And then I went into birds, and I had those cockatiels with the red cheeks.
Yeah.
And I learned in sense of entitlement. It was amazing. Like, you know, she would put her head, or he would put his head like that, and then kind of like demand to be petted. And then if you didn't pet the way that he wanted to, he would poke at you. And then there were times that I had to be at work like you know, many long hours. And then I would come in and then he would fly right into my feet and hurt me, like, and then look at me like, and where were you? Like, I'm here. And why aren't you taking care of me? Like, the rage was there with this, like, you know, bringing the feathers out and walking in and looking at me like, I don't understand why I'm not your priority to take care of me. And then for my dog, just total unconditional love. It just didn't matter, like, what it was in front of them. It was just this loyalty. So it was so interesting when you were telling me that I was constantly thinking about my own experience, you know, when I had bunnies or, you know, all the other kinds that I also had. Every part of them which was a bit dominant in them, or that it was becoming dominant in reaction to a thing that I was doing. Let's say, you know, an interaction between us, that part of them became dominant. And it was beautiful, I think, that because I would learn from them without being intimidated. You know, sometimes, like, when you learn these things in life with human beings, sometimes you feel intimidated by them. But these things, like when, you know, the animal was coming after me, even angry at me, I was learning this without being intimidated. So it was like such a fresh concept of learning that was showing me who I can be. Even the times that I was entitled and maybe it wasn't working, or that I should be entitled and take a stand for myself the same way that, you know, my bird was. Like, you know, why are you leaving me alone for like 12 hours? That's just not okay. So it's interesting in how we can connect to these type of different world, whether it's nature or whether it's particular animals, to ourself. And no matter what, I guess that when we are connecting with the outside world, whether it's the nature or animals within the nature, that there is a projection of us. There is a part of us that is viewing the world, so we can only see things as it applies to us. And if we're open to seeing that, then we could really connect to who we are and different getting to know different parts of us. And then, as you say, kind of like balance all these parts as it's necessary to deal with the outside world. And, you know, as we live with the civilized world and the corporate world and all that is needed to also be a successful person, you know, as we live. So when you look at your own journey of coming from a nature space, your childhood, coming and getting all trimmed by the world, and then finding yourself back out there, what is the message that you want to your readers of the book Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wildness in Civilized World, to really get?
I'm hoping that people will recognize that they all have an inner authentic wildness, a unique self that's invisible, that wants to express. It is a higher vibration energy, so it is also offers us healing. When I was collecting the bones, I was so in love with the bones for 20 years. So curious. That's a childlike quality, curiosity. So curious, like, what is this bone? I knew nothing about anatomy. What animal did it come from? How does this animal live? How did it die? So I just kept following the threads of my curiosity to books and bookstores, and then the next wonder. And I was so in awe and wonder that it kept me in the present mode. A lot of modern healers now talk about being present. And when we think about the past or the future or people that hurt us or things that we have anxiety about in the future, our energy is getting dispersed out of our bodies towards the past or the future. But when we're so curious about something and enmeshed, all our energy is present. And that's what happened to me. I had quite a few physical ailments. One horrific thing on my cheek, where my cheek was just bright, oozing red. And I'd been to every doctor, no one, it was like an anomaly. And I had to show that face in this high society world because nothing could heal it. And then just overnight, you know, 10 years into working with bones, it disappeared.
Wow.
It was that present healing energy that I had with myself that healed me. And so for us to connect with who we are as a child and remember what we loved to do most, and for me it was to be in nature and have an imaginary realm, is healing. And that's a clue as where to go forward with your authenticity. to get this higher vibration and to keep you in the present. And the animals are my guides because of the animal bones. And our ancestors did look to the animals. The wolves taught them how to hunt. Mm-hmm. And there is a difference between a wild animal and a domesticated animal. So a dog is beautiful because it reminds us of the wolf and the pack animal and the unconditional love. But a dog, depending on its owner, is going to act differently because they kind of, in a way, are like us, have been domesticated and shaped and told what to do, when, why, and how. A cat is very hard to tame. So they're a great bridge because they're going to do what they want to do when they want to do it. And I loved what you, when you were talking about all your animals, because you were talking about this concept of going inward. You were open to this idea that your animals were teaching you something or communicating something with you. You were being very intuitive. These are all things that we can use to go inward, to connect with our authentic wildness. And it's not like you had to prove it in a book or have it scientifically proven. You just knew. There was something in you that just knew. And that's connection. You were connecting with those animals by honoring them and being open and using your intuition. So bravo.
So you talked about also a lot of tips. What is it that you can give to our audience and listeners that they can use every day so they can connect to that part of them, to part of self, to the childlike or the wildness or the spiritual part of themselves, that in that connection, they feel free. They get to know who they are and they get to manage or be with or honor or play, from that part with the world.
Well, nature, in addition to animals, is my greater teacher. There's a vibe. The only thing constant in nature is change. So there's a vibration in nature. Every season has a different vibration. Every day has a different vibration. And like music, it can heal us. And it comes to us through our sensory circuits, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. And some of us prefer or actually are gifted in one or more of these sensory organs. So it's really relaxing and healing to play with that. So I call them bone woman wanders. And I have the people that I work with go out and wander in nature. It can be at a park or it can be on a hike, depending on your comfort level. And don't have an agenda. Don't, just be, a lot of us, I used to multitask, talk to my friend and we'll walk at the same time. And I'm outdoors in nature and I'm with my friend. Yes, that's beneficial. But I was so in tune to the conversation, my senses really weren't open to all that's around me. So being alone is more helpful, or in silence, no earbuds, no podcast interviews, and just really take note of your senses. What are you smelling? What are you seeing? What are you tasting? Do you want to stop and touch something? A slow pace, and don't even know where your path is going to go. Just let your intuition guide you. And if you can, or you're worried, you need to get back at a certain time, just set a timer to gently remind you to turn around and go home. But when I go on my wanders, which is at least 3 or 4 days a week, I'm gone. I love it so much. I think I'm going to be gone an hour and I'm gone 3 hours because I get so lost in, it's a communication and a dialogue with myself, with the nature around me. Spectacular things happen, animal interactions and sightings, a beautiful leaf, wind. I take note of it all, and it's a conversation and a dialogue that I'm having with something greater than myself, and then it slays my loneliness. It's a higher vibration. I come back refreshed, and the whole point in nature is transformation, moving on the wheel of life, death, rebirth, life, death, rebirth, like the moon. So another thing you can do besides the bone woman wanders is follow the moon cycle and patterns, because every month the moon grows from a new moon to a full moon and then dies off and goes inward to a dark moon. And we're meant to follow that same rhythm. So to bring it all full circle to the music intro that you did, nature is music. Humans are nature. And the more we can open up with our conduits to connect with nature, animals will come our way and there'll be a message there. And then we can decipher it. And it's a mystery like the moon. And we just follow these little lighted paths to transformation. So it's obviously outward manifesting goals. But don't forget to relax and slow down and go inward and receive and also be intuitive.
Mm-hmm. and the intuitiveness that comes inside is, I'm also sensing from you that it's this dance between the inside and the outside, so that it's, as you are inside, I was hearing that you are still inside but connecting to the outside. You're just seeing it from a different place. You're viewing the world outside from a different experience versus only your mind and categorizations and things you know, but you're bringing a sense felt, whether it's your eyes or ears or, you know, the five senses or the sixth one, you're kind of just moving now, bringing information in from that. So even when you say inside, I guess the distinction is for me that if I'm sitting in a room, closed eyes, or just watching, you know, one location of meditation, then it's all inside. But when you're walking, and when I'm hearing you, imagining you, you're sharing with me as you're walking in the nature, it's like inside and out all at the same time, just from a different place. Am I getting that right?
Spot on. That is okay. Such a good summary. And one of my great teachers is Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who wrote Women Who Run With Wolves, and she calls it walking between worlds. So when you're doing that, you are outside walking between worlds. You know where you are at all times. Oh, I'm having a connection to the spiritual realm, or I'm talking to myself, but oh, I'm still a human being grounded in the earth plane. And this is new for our collective culture. This is what we're learning to do, is integrate, because we've all known people who are super spiritual and it's just so wonderful to be around them and they're loving and they have a high vibration, but they really have a hard time on the earth plane. They're overcome by sadness of the condition of people in the planet, or they just can't make money, or they don't resonate with culture. And so they're out of balance overemphasizing this inner essence. And then we know the people that overemphasize tangible results and accomplishments and degrees and money, and they're really neglecting that there's an invisible universe all around us. So balance, balance, balance. And yes, I'm constantly walking between two worlds and letting the spiritual realm inform me what to do as a human being in this tangible world.
And you also, we have a couple more minutes only, but this is very important, where you talk about old age, becoming an elderly, in a whole different way, which are obviously pop culture says that you have to put hormone growth and Botox and do facelifts and, you know, wear all these things, which really shows your youth, and you have to stay at your youth and, you know, growing old and looking old and, you know, feeling old is just not okay. And in your book, you also talk about, you know, the concept of being an elder and how to honor that and what it has for the person. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The modern mainstream culture and the media right now overemphasizes physical beauty and tangible proof of success. And I was raised in a family where physical beauty is everything. I had to do the 360 twirl before I left the door. I had to go on diets. So I know this well. And yet what I learned from the indigenous culture is that the elders are the ones with the wisdom. But it comes from paying attention to your life and everything that's happening and making sense of it, so that when you come to your elder years, you know who you are, what your gift is, and you have something to share. In fact, Clarissa Pinkola Estes calls turning your wound into a gift. So what seems really traumatic and horrible can also be your gift, because you immerse in it and you know it. So once you know it, you turn it around, and then that's the gift that you share with the world to make it a better place. But our body declines on purpose so that we will put more emphasis on our inner radiance and essence and our wisdom when we are in our elder years. And our youth needs the elders. So I like to think of it as a circle. I look at every life stage and what the purpose of that life stage is. And then when you get to be an elder, you have this wisdom. I love millennials. I love, love, love them. They're young. They're full of energy, and it fuels me when I'm around them, and they have a new view of the world. I don't want to be stuck in my view of the world my whole life, so they tell me what's going on, and then they need me as a solid platform, non-judgmental, to hold the container for them and say, you're okay, this is what happens in this stage of your life, you're not alone, this is normal, and it's a circle. And then I see all the people in the middle who have children or symbolic babies and families that they're very busy working on at the mid stage of their life. So that it all works in a circle. It's that life, death, rebirth. There's so many symbols. The last thing I want to say is that this inner essence that we're talking about, the dialogue with animals, loves to speak in symbols. Symbols. So I'm constantly interpreting symbols when an animal comes to me, or a tree, or a leaf, or a situation, or a dream.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for writing the book. Thank you for putting all of your experiences and sharing it with us. And I know that people can find you in AuthenticWildness.com, and you are also a wildness coach. Are you right? Wildness guide, inner wildness guide. And they can find you. And you also have, I think, retreats, right?
I do retreats. Most of them are custom, but people do come to my property, which is beautiful, to connect with nature and to work on all these things. Yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So everyone, Lucinda White, please go get the book. It's an amazing book. It's a lot of just amazing connection that you get. And it's new. It's a very new way of experiencing this. And trust me, I've been a therapist for 30 years and gone into spiritual paths for 30 years. This is such a new way of looking at things that it was really refreshing and intriguing. So the book is Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wildness in a Civilized World. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. Bless you.
Take good care of yourself. Everyone who are out there, create an amazing world for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.